Ross did not exist before this episode. What they're about to describe is happening across east of England as you listen. This is their story. In Brentwood and Ongar, construction workers cannot access the training that would qualify them for electrical work, even as housing developments rise on every horizon and training workshops sit half empty with new equipment unused. The apprenticeship schemes that once bridged this gap have been suspended, their funding diverted elsewhere while the need grows stronger.
I've wanted to be an electrician since I was 14, watching my dad work on roofs around Brentwood. He taught me the basics, how to read a circuit, how to strip wire properly, but he always said the same thing, get qualified, get your papers, don't end up like me doing cash jobs forever. So I saved. 3 years of labouring work, putting aside what I could, living at home, driving the same beaten up van, my dad left me. By 2023, I had enough saved for the course fees and I was ready. Essex County Council ran an apprenticeship scheme that was perfect for people like me. You could work part-time while training, get your level 3 qualification and come out the other end with real prospects. I filled out the application in January, spent weeks getting my references together, even bought the basic toolkit they recommended. When I called in March to check on my application, the woman on the phone sounded tired. "I'm sorry, Ross," she said. "The funding has been cut. We're not taking new apprentices this year." That hit hard, but I wasn't giving up. I drove over to Basildon College, figured I'd pay for the course myself if I had to. The receptionist was helpful enough, gave me all the brochures. But when I sat down with the admissions tutor, he shook his head. "The Construction Industry Training Board levy funding isn't available for your area," he explained. "There's nothing I can do about that. Treasury rules." I pointed out the window toward the A12, where you could see three housing developments going up simultaneously. "There's building work everywhere," I said. "Surely that means there's demand for electricians." He just shrugged. "That's not how the funding works, mate." So I tried the Job Centre Plus office in Brentwood. The advisor, a woman called Sarah, was polite but firm. "There is no budget for construction training this year," she told me, "but we've got retail opportunities, Tesco's hiring, and there's a new Lidl opening in Worley." I explained that I'd been working construction for years, that I had the skills and just needed the qualification. "I understand," she said, "but that's what we've got funding for." That afternoon, I was angry enough to drive back to Basildon College. I wasn't sure what I was planning to do, maybe just sit in the car park and think, but I ended up walking around the campus, and that's when I saw them. The electrical workshops, brand new equipment, workbenches that looked like they'd barely been touched. I found one of the tutors, a guy called Dave, who was locking up for the day. "Quiet in there," I said. He looked frustrated. "We've got 12 unfilled places on the level 3 electrical course." 12. "All this kit just sitting here because we can't access the funding." He gestured at the workshops behind him. "CITB money is being held back. Treasury rules, they say. Meanwhile, I've got lads calling me every week asking about places." Walking home through my neighbourhood that evening, I started paying attention to things I'd stopped seeing. My neighbour John, a plasterer for 20 years, had been out of work for 6 months. Two doors down, Mike the carpenter was doing odd jobs because the building firm he worked for had folded. Across the street, there was Paul, who'd been a site supervisor until his company lost contracts and had to let him go. Four skilled tradesmen, all living within 100 yards of each other, all looking for work. The irony was everywhere once I started noticing it. The new development at the end of our road had been advertising for electricians for months. The site manager had even put a notice in the local shop. Qualified electricians wanted, competitive rates, immediate start. Another development near the station had signs up for the same thing. These weren't just any building sites either. They were building the homes that Brentwood desperately needed, the ones the council kept saying they had to deliver to meet government targets. I used to accept what they told me. There is no funding. It sounded reasonable. Everyone was tightening their belts, weren't they? Austerity was still the word you heard in the news, but standing in that empty workshop, looking at equipment worth tens of thousands of pounds, gathering dust, while skilled tradesmen sat at home and building sites scrambled for qualified workers, I started asking different questions. The government that issues the pound told me it could not find enough pounds to connect the people who wanted to train with the workshops that were sitting empty. But I could see with my own eyes that the people existed, the equipment existed, the tutors existed, and the need existed. What exactly was missing? The materials were there. The skills could be taught. The jobs were waiting. I realized the excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. They were applying household logic to a currency issuer. When my dad said we couldn't afford something, that made sense because we had to earn our money before we could spend it. But the government issues the money. It doesn't have to find pounds before it spends them. It creates them when it spends them. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the government wanted to deploy the resources that were sitting there unused. The limit was never the pounds. The limit was the willingness to spend them into the places and the people who needed them. I'm still here, still watching, still working the same labouring jobs. But I understand now what I didn't understand at the start. Every time someone in Westminster said the cupboard was bare, they were making a political choice and dressing it up as an accounting problem. The resources were always there. The decision not to connect them was about priorities, not possibilities. This isn't just my story. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone with power chooses scarcity over abundance. The pounds they said didn't exist were never the constraint. The constraint was an idea, and ideas can be changed.
What Ross experienced has a name: cherry picking. This technique selects rare examples where spending failed to justify never spending, while ignoring overwhelming evidence of what happens when government does invest. It's like arguing that all medicine is dangerous because some people have allergic reactions, then refusing to treat anyone for anything. In Ross's story, every institution cited the same excuse: there is no funding. But this was cherry-picking in action. They pointed to isolated examples of construction training schemes that didn't deliver perfect results and used those failures to justify cutting successful programs. Meanwhile, they ignored Vienna's social housing, Singapore's public construction workforce, and every major UK city that built council housing successfully until 1980. The austerity objection was predictable. Other councils tried building housing and it failed. Selective examples prove nothing. Vienna, Singapore, and every major UK city until 1980 built council housing successfully at scale. The question is what conditions make it work, not whether it has ever failed somewhere. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources. People, skills, materials, time. In Ross's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Brentwood and Ongar ranks 420 out of 543 English constituencies on the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in deprivation decile 8. The constituency has 4,155 registered charities, according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £42.2 million, according to 360 Giving Grant NAVs. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics, produced by Blocked Britain.